You have arrived at your destination. That's right, Wildlings. You have arrived at your destination, and it's time to rock and roll all night and podcast every Tuesday. It's me, the man, the myth, the Sean Thriller Smith, the guy putting rad back into talk radio. And of course, you're listening to the Sean vs. Wild podcast. Joining me in the virtual Smithsonian this Tuesday, I have Kevin Lacerda, frontman, lead singer for It Lives, It Breathes. And he's going to be talking all about his band. They're currently in the studio laying down some new tracks. He's going to be talking about their time on Stay Sick. They were signed to Stay Sick, which is owned by Franz from Attila. He's going to be talking about all that great stuff, and we're going to have a great conversation about one of our favorite topics. You guys know, pro wrestling. I love wrestling. He loves wrestling, so we're going to be chatting about it today in the Smithsonian, and I had a great time doing this. I know I've mentioned it before, but one of my favorite things about the podcast is sometimes you meet people, talk to them for the first time, and you know, you're able to kind of just be old friends right after that. We talked for probably an additional hour after the recorder was off, and we just had an excellent time. So, Kevin, thanks so much for doing this, and guys, you're going to love the conversation here. Pretty short and sweet for me this week. I am super busy. Been super busy with the podcast, so I'm excited to be able to bring everything to you guys that I have coming up. So make sure you tune in every Tuesday. If you haven't yet, subscribe on iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, wherever you do your social media, YouTube. Just follow the podcast, man. Make sure you never miss an episode. I got a lot of good stuff coming up for you. And yeah, let's go ahead and get this taken care of. I'm going to TCB here. Big shout out to Audiophile Inc., my sponsor there. Shane at AudiophileInc.com has been printing my merch for years and years and years, whether it's with the podcast or with the bands that I've been in the past. He could do the same for you. So if you have a band, a podcast, an idea, a business, he can get you set up with some sick merch to get your name out there and make you some money while you're on the road. Also, big shout to Audible. Audible's an Amazon company that sponsors the podcast. And because you listen to Sean vs. Wild, you'll also get a free 30-day trial of Audible. All you have to do is go to audibletrial.com/Sean vs. Wild. That's audibletrial.com/Sean vs. Wild. Sign up for your free 30 days. When you do, you do get to keep an audiobook of your choosing. You have over 180,000 audiobooks to choose from. Give it a listen. Even if you decide Audible's not for you, you get to keep the book. So how cool is that, guys? But yeah, big shout out to Joe Brock, as always, for booping the dials each and every week. He's making this happen. And like I said, let's keep it short and sweet. That's going to be it for me, guys. This is my conversation with Kevin Lacerda. Now let's get wild. All right, Kevin, I'll tell you what, this has been a year in the making, give or take. I know we've been chatting back and forth, sending messages, sending emails, talking about wrestling for a full year. Ever since I saw the WrestleMania 33 covers on YouTube, did I want to have you on the podcast. And now you're here. We're making it happen.
What's up, brother?
Yeah, what's up, man? Welcome very much. I don't know. Welcome to the Sean vs. Wild podcast here. Glad to have you on. But yeah, speaking of WrestleMania 33 covers, I got to get it out here, all right? We don't necessarily have to talk all about it, but we probably will on this podcast. Listeners, we're probably going to talk about our favorite thing, pro wrestling. But quickly, what are your thoughts on WrestleMania 34?
My overall thoughts of WrestleMania 34, I mean, it's certainly pales to some degree. I mean, I as a wrestling fan, I'm different than I was when I was obviously a little kid. So I see different things that I like out of professional wrestling. So in you know, obviously in comparison to NXT TakeOver, it pales, but obviously not in terms of grandeur, just more so in terms of storyline and match quality and things like that. But that's perfectly fine because I'm obviously willing to, you know, understand that what I'm getting in WrestleMania 34 is going to be completely different. I thought that the entrances were just so fun to roll with and watch, everything from seeing Seth Rollins come out like the Night King from Game of Thrones to Charlotte, which was more to me. I mean, I love more than anything in wrestling, I love when they're able to still at this age, help me suspend disbelief and just help me understand the story that they're trying to tell. So for the people that would not necessarily, you know, if there's any casuals out there that are listening or just don't understand at all, if they go back on Charlotte's journey, back to when she was in NXT, and you go back to those earlier WrestleManias where she was actually one of the girls on Triple H's throne when he came out for one of his WrestleMania matches. And then you fast forward, and then her entrance was essentially the same thing, but with, you know, obviously the male guards.
Right.
It's a full circle style of story for, you know, this amazing journey that we're all in present day watching. Cause, you know, it's really cool. I mean, I imagine that my uncles that were around when Ric Flair was coming up, it's cool for them to see Ric Flair, where he started, all of his original world title runs, and where he became who he was up until now, obviously retired and just being, you know, crazy Ric Flair that goes and does all the crazy shit that Ric Flair does.
Right.
But for us, we're literally living in the age of an icon in the making in Charlotte. And it was really cool to see. We're just seeing all these monumental things happen right down to her entrance, all the things that have happened with her this far, all the barriers that she's broken with Hell in a Cell matches. We know at some point she is most likely going to be the one that's one of the women chosen to headline the first women's WrestleMania main event. And then obviously her breaking Asuka's streak. There's just a lot of cool things. So yeah, it was like the entrances. I would say that was probably the grandest thing. I think that the whole thing about this WrestleMania's card was that the card was great, but it seemed like the weeks building up the build to this year's WrestleMania wasn't bad. It was just a little slow and it wasn't really as engaging, where some years you see it's gotten amazing, not as amazing a card, but the build up is really good.
Right.
This year had a great card, but the build seemed kind of lame, especially with the John Cena thing. It just, I didn't know it spawned so many tinfoil hat theories with like wondering if it was going to be the American Badass that came out, or just what was going to happen. Were we going to see him a week before? Were we going to see him 2 weeks before? What the hell is going to go on? And it was annoying. But then by the time it got to Mania, I'll be honest, I thought everything they did with that John Cena in the crowd thing was like the funnest thing to watch, because Cena is, people don't give him a lot of credit, he's really funny. And he's funny in a non-cheesy way if he wants to be. Like,
right.
He can be funny in the good cheesy way, not in a cringy cheesy way. And he was hilarious.
Yeah.
Watching him in the crowd, not knowing what was going to go on, how he's going to do that. I'm like, well, he's not wearing his jorts, so he's definitely not going to wrestle. And then the ref comes on, he runs to the back, and I'm like, what the hell's going on here? This is hilarious. It's fun at the same time. And it was almost like, since they kept cutting to him in each match, it was almost like Cena was the unofficial host of WrestleMania this year.
Yeah, I know. And boy, how good did The Undertaker look this year, too?
Oh, he moved fantastic. Clearly, we could tell that, obviously, you know, either Mark Calloway, The Undertaker, or they have had enough of a discussion with him after the performance last year. And just, I mean, granted, we need to give him a break. Calloway had, you know, he was due for hip replacement, combined with the fact that he's so old at this point. But he came back like a goddamn rock star and
yes,
was killing it like the days of old, you know?
Yeah.
It was fantastic. I loved it.
Yeah. And I'll tell you,
but I mean, as far as that, that's my ups. Like, as far as the downs, some of the matches that I anticipated to be classics, like AJ and Shinsuke, didn't really live up to, they weren't a snooze, but they didn't really live up to it, to what I was expecting. However, once I saw the Shinsuke heel turn at the end of the match, I could very clearly tell that what they're trying to tell here is that this is not going to be the last time they're fighting.
Yeah,
and that
absolutely.
They're going to build crazier and crazier matches. So it's like, we're only in chapter one, tip of the iceberg of what we know is going to be the style match that we saw at Wrestle Kingdom years ago between AJ and Nakamura.
And I thought that, oddly enough, what they did with Nakamura and Styles is probably what they were going to do with Charlotte and Asuka. Like, I projected, like, okay, you know, if Asuka does lose, she's going to turn on Charlotte. She's going to go crazy. She's going to go heel. And, you know, leading up to more matches, I didn't think personally Asuka was going to lose. I figured she would lose to Charlotte of all people, maybe at SummerSlam, maybe after beating her one time, you know, because Charlotte is a, you know, an iconic female wrestler, just an iconic wrestler, period. And the fact, though, that Charlotte has lost to people like Sasha in the past, and Bayley or Natty or Naomi, and, you know, Asuka can say that she has some victories over those people. Like, I didn't think Asuka would necessarily lose in her first matchup with Charlotte, but that's the way it rolled. But, you know, if you're going to lose, if you're Asuka, if you're going to lose, why not do it at WrestleMania to Charlotte Flair?
Yeah, that's pretty much, I'm in the same boat. It was one of those things where I was like a little put off it by first, but it was like, if you're going to lose, I guess it's not that it's not believable, it being to Charlotte, with from a storytelling perspective, she's clearly a believable way, a believable contender to beat her. But yeah, I mean, I just think everybody was still so into the idea of this indomitable streak that Asuka had going on. But, you know, it's one, I think they, after that, they clearly set the precedent that New Orleans is the place where streaks go to die.
Yes, exactly.
You know, so we'll, I mean, obviously as new streaks come about for whatever various reasons, we're going to always be freaked out every time we go back to the Superdome in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. That this is going to be a recurring thing.
This is the last night of the streak, and this is where it will be
broken. Exactly.
Man,
100%.
Pro wrestling is so awesome. Guys, if you don't watch pro wrestling, what are you doing? Guys, go
ahead. What is wrong with you?
Exactly. Go ahead, tune in right now. But this is not just the Wrestling Appreciation Podcast. This is the Sean versus Wild Podcast, and I'm here with Kevin Lacerda, lead singer of It Lives, It Breathes. Okay, so we're not here just to talk about wrestling. We're going to talk about your band. We're going to talk about some awesome stuff here. Kevin, like I said, listeners, it's been about a year in the making. I got you on the show. So fantastic. Very stoked about it. Kevin, why don't you give the listeners some deets on It Lives, It Breathes, man? Just a backstory or some, what's your origin?
Well, we've been around, It Lives, It Breathes, we're from the New England area, specifically Providence, Rhode Island, but, you know, it's just, you know, from more people that come from, so Rhode Island's such a small state that, you know, we tend to just kind of say New England, since it's that whole region that we're able to drive to within seemingly a half an hour to get to Connecticut or to Massachusetts and everything like that. But we've been around since basically around 2012, 2013. The lineup that we're here now has been around for, you know, probably a good 5-6 years. And we're, you know, it's become a very close brotherhood. We released 2 years ago, we released our debut album on Franz from Attila's label at the time, Stasic Recordings. As of right now, we're actually independent, but we had a really good first album cycle over there with them until we actually, you know, stepped away from that. And we were able to tour pretty relentlessly in 2016. We went on tour with Franz had actually released at one point in late 2015 his own solo rap album. We toured off that. We toured with Palisades. We toured with Ice Nine Kills. We toured with some legacy veteran bands like Affiance. We toured with a lot of different artists because the album itself is a pretty diverse sound, even though ultimately we're just a rock band at the end of the day. But we play with a lot of diversified elements because I think that's just kind of how we see music now. We don't see music as too much of a black and white. So, and we also ourselves have so many different interests and influences that make us what we are. So if you were able to go and actually pick up on, you know, streaming it off Spotify or Apple Music or Deezer or whatever you use, our album Silver Nights plays with everything that gets a bit edgier on the metalcore side, which is how the band kind of started, to more of the epic rock anthem stuff that defines a lot of the bigger singles on the album, but also gets into this kind of experimental zone with a lot of the EDM influences that we have on the album. So having all those diversified elements with the different songs in the album, we tried a lot of ambitious tours. We went out with rapper Kyle Lucas, who's done EPs with Johnny Craig. We went out with a YouTuber that's also a musician by the name of Social Repose. We went out with a transgender musician named Stephanie Bright, and we just tried a lot of different stuff. And, you know, we were willing to, other artists are kind of based on their style of music or what they feel as though they want to tour with, whether that's like a extreme metal band or something that's, you know, I don't know, I care if it's even like this Wildlife style of acoustic folk vibe. They only feel like they can tour with certain types of artists, but we kind of wanted to be able to try to tour with everything. And that's obviously easier said than done, but we've seen a lot of interesting fan types love our music just because our live presence is something that connects with everyone because we treat it all the same way. So even though the music might be something that initially a fan has to kind of grow to attach to or to get used to or to be able to palate, once they always see us live, we're always able to connect with almost any age group just because we're that interested in making that connection. Everything down to how I'm, you know, performing every night and how I'm looking every person directly in their eyes. So plus, and you know, we're just obviously giving 200% every night down to the fact that we're running off stage puking. So I think it's always made a good connection when it came to touring.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny, I'm secretly proud of myself, but I didn't get a chance to bring it up. Cause I was like, you guys are like metalcore meets like electronic elements and like big, anthemic stuff like Queen or something like that. And of course you touched on all of those, but yeah, I imagine touring, you know, doing that, as long as that live show is top notch, I mean, you're going to give, there's going to be someone in the crowd that's going to be able to connect to at least some of these elements that you guys are laying down.
Yeah, well, especially nowadays, because everything with just music has so many facets for people to grab at it, that it's almost like it's hard for an artist to release something that everyone is able to. It's so easy to get the music out to everyone that it's now difficult to get the music out to everyone, because the fact that it has so many facets and the people have so much to choose from, it's hard for them to know which one to pick from. So for us, touring has been the way to make that kind of like finite connection with a fan that makes everyone kind of a diehard. And it's always been kind of a really big focus, right down to our showcase before we signed to Stay Sick. When they were there to see us live, it was the same thing they said to us. That was the big thing for me, was that they had said, you made 20 people in the room. Cause I remember that particular show didn't have a lot of people there. It made 20 people in that room feel like it was 100 people. And that was the whole point. Like every time we'd play for anyone, if we're playing for five, make them feel like there's 50 people in the room. There's 100 kids in the room. Make it feel like it's 1,000. Right. We have to go that hard. We have to make that kind of a connection. We have to make them feel like they're inside Madison Square Garden, even if it's just inside of a club, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it worked. So,
well, you know, not to just, you know, take the attention off of you guys, but, you know, we kind of had the same thing. I told you that I played in a band called Uh-Huh Baby Yeah before we got rolling. And listeners out there will know, like, the live show was basically what made our band. You know, we didn't necessarily do a lot of the some of the, like, the more productive elements. It was more kind of stripped down rock and roll, punk rock type of stuff. But it was always like the live show, because, you know, if you make people feel special, even if there's only a few people there in the room, those are the people that are going to be your fans. And then they're the ones that are going to talk about you and tell more people. And they're the ones that are going to buy merch because they really, really care. And that's the way, guys, if you're listening and you're in a band, that's the way that you make fans. Make them feel special and play, whether there's one person there or whether you're just playing to the sound guy, make it happen. You know what I'm saying? Make it happen. And check out that cutting edge production, guys. You know what? I was going to lie about it, but we had the call drop right there. And you know what? We just rocked it and rolled it. You guys probably didn't even notice it. That is studio magic there for you. But dude, yeah. So Kevin, what are some of the, like, the influences and stuff that you guys have? I know we were talking on all the different, you know, kind of genres and stuff, but what bands, like, really did it for you growing up? What made you want to be a musician?
I know, like, my guitar specifically, he actually is a producer himself. So, I mean, a lot of his DJ producer stuff is very Calvin Harris influenced and things like that. So, I mean, sometimes he gets to the point where he's right. We realized he was getting to a point where he was writing stuff for us that we're just like, yeah, this is, we're crossing the boundary too much to where he needed to split up and start to write for his own stuff. It was almost too electronic or too pop related where we wouldn't have a way for it to adapt. You know what I mean? But, like, obviously myself, I love all sorts of different genres, everything down from R&B and growing up with, you know, artists like Michael Jackson and Prince, and then even into, you know, later years with, like, artists like Usher and stuff like that. It's kind of always because my mother brought me up on one style, but then my uncles brought me up on hard rock and metal. So, I mean, I grew up with this duality that I couldn't kind of get away from. And then as I got older and kind of found my voice where I wasn't, I mean, most kids kind of, they're either getting into school because a parent got them into it or they liked it and they tried doing it in school and it kind of built from there. A lot of kids start bands and they're like pretty young in high school, but I didn't start till I was in my early 20s. So I kind of found it by accident. But at the same time, I always would sing in my car growing up. I just didn't think I had a voice. I thought that I was just kind of singing for fun.
Did you have any school training or anything?
Say what?
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I was going to say, but did you have any, like, school training or anything? Or was it just specifically singing in the car, singing in the shower?
Literally learned by accident. I basically went to Montreal when I had just turned 18. And my brother had gotten out of the military. So we kind of went for, like, a weekend fun trip. And we were just drunk. And I remember singing I Believe in a Thing Called Love because I love that song. And then we're in just like in a karaoke bar, and then all the French Canadians were just freaking out about it, talking in French. And my brother knew a little bit of French, so he was saying that they loved it. And then that gave me a little bit of confidence. So when I went back home, and then I would go to a karaoke bar with my friends. And then little by little, I was just like, you know what? I think I'm going to try and join a band or start a band or something. And then everything from there. And I've obviously, for anyone that's ever been in like a local band, usually you never hit it your first time around. You're always in like 50 million different shitty local bands before you click with a group of guys that you know, eventually start touring with and write an album with and things like that. But I mean, everything that I was built on from a rock end was always the Queen, the Journey stuff, and then just my uncles, and it's so much different stuff. You know, I mean, everything from Slipknot to, you know, my guitarist loves Korn, and there's just so much stuff that it kind of makes the writing process hard from an influential perspective, because you're trying to write for yourself, but you're influenced by so much stuff that it kind of becomes like a Jackson Pollock painting of sound.
Yeah. Well, you know, what a great time for us to grow up. I don't know. I'm 31. Okay. So I figure we're probably pretty similar in age, but what a time to grow up when you can have, you know, Michael Jackson and Prince, but you can also have Motley Crue. You can also have, you know, Queen, and those influences coming up from your parents and your aunts and uncles and stuff like that. But then also, you know, we got to experience nu metal. We got to experience like the next wave of American hardcore, the pop punk, the emo, you know, metalcore, all that.
Yeah,
sort
that's
of stuff.
What I'm saying. Like, especially for people that are a little bit older, like they have seen so many different changes in music. It's so drastic. Like, it's way more drastic than kids that were born in like the early 2000s or the late 90s. Like, they've seen some changes, but like obviously they still have a lot longer to live before, you know, we see where music's going to go from here. But like, there's been the decades that people that were born in like, say, the 80s and stuff like that, they've seen like some seriously drastic changes in music, from the 80s hair metal stuff and how pop was then, to grunge, to the boy bands, to, like you said, with the nu metal, and then turning into that term from extreme heavy music, turning into the American metalcore movement. It's just so many crazy, crazy changes in music.
Yeah. And you guys, you were telling me before we started rolling that you are actually in the studio now, right?
Yeah, we're basically in the studio now. I live in Orlando, Florida, but I'm up and back with the band in New England, and trying to put an attention onto kind of like what I said to you earlier, kind of like double writing. We're writing on the back end for an eventual new album when we feel though that's the right time, and making sure those songs are what they need to be. But also taking more into a focus as far as releasing, because we want to be able to release new stuff very, very soon, within the next few weeks. But, you know, obviously people are used to saying, oh, when's your next album coming out? We're definitely not ready to release an album, but we have a lot that we've been tracking and recording that we love and want to get out there. But we're kind of trying to take the focus into, from a marketing perspective, that we hope a lot of other artists eventually that it becomes the norm. We obviously see that a lot of other artists are releasing their music like this, but it's just more the focus on strong singles and strong visual content for either your YouTube and things like that, and being more about singles, putting a lot of focus into your singles, whether even your tours and your runs are going into that, but obviously with great visuals in terms of your videos and stuff like that. So everything is obviously so much more, I mean, it's different if you're getting pushed on radio, but a lot of us underground artists, that's not necessarily something that we have the access to yet. But everything is about playlists, you know, especially when it comes to Spotify, which for us is a huge hub, because we showcase our wrestling covers that we found kind of a niche in, doing really, really well on Spotify. So we use those covers as a way to kind of supplement new people finding out about our music, because we realized that outside of our originals, one way that we, you know, there's a lot of bands that like try to go out there and do the whole game with covers, but when you're a certain type of band and you're kind of working within a certain genre, whether that's heavier, whether it's more straightforward rock, whether it's softer, you kind of start to realize you have to market yourself a certain way. You don't know what kind of fan you're trying to go for. And when I, as a fan of professional wrestling, I realized that, you know, wrestling fans aren't just hard rock fans. They're not just hip hop fans. They're not just country fans. They're kind of everything, because wrestling fans aren't just, they're not part of a genre. They're not metal fans or one thing. They're a culture. But right. Wrestling is a culture. So, and music is a huge part of that culture. and especially when it comes to themes. And I started to notice that more and more. And so when we started to realize what we wanted to be our niche in terms of covers, we didn't want to follow the road that we saw a lot of these bands like Our Last Night going, because we knew we would just never be able to compete, because they're just on such a larger platform with so many more followers that if they covered Kendrick Lamar's Humble and we did too, theirs is clearly going to outshine us, even if ours happened to be to most people that heard it better than theirs, because they just have more outreach. We needed to find a different road, something that worked better for us. We tried the wrestling thing, and I think it came across authentic because everyone in this band, no one more than me, but everyone in the band is a fan of professional wrestling. We appreciate the art form. And so we put a lot of heart into the covers, and we hit a home run. Yeah, with everyone that's listened to it. Everyone loves it. So it's kind of become our niche now.
Well, and I love it. And like I said, as soon as I saw the covers for WrestleMania 33, which is a year ago, guys, WrestleMania 34 just happened. I was like, man, I got to talk to this band. And yeah, and I think you're right. Music is actually such a huge part of professional wrestling, because, you know, just music alone, it has so many that, you know, when you watch wrestling, there's so many different styles of music and things like that, because that music sets the tone for the character. You know what I'm saying? And the fans there, you know, they love it. You know, some music just becomes iconic over time. You know, when you hear Real American, you know, the Hulkster brother is going to come out.
Exactly.
You know? Or you hear Stone Cold Steve
Austin. It helps you transport in time, depending on when the music was released. And to be honest, a lot of those fans I've found specifically from doing this, they're more accepting of us than when we've tried to release. Before we started doing these covers, it was, you know, about a year after we had kind of run out of our album cycle for our debut. And it was really hard in a lot of different ways, pushing that album's music on the certain types of fans online, because certain types of age groups and certain, like, they're not necessarily as accepting of your music. There's kind of like this cool guy factor to a lot of that. And you have to, if you're not within like that bracket of the issues bands and the, you know, certain ones that are being pushed a certain way, and you try something new, can very easily be said to be just a really lame, cheesy band or a cringy band. But once we did nothing different when we did the wrestling covers that we did for our originals. And we were just the same thing ourselves, but all the wrestling fans, and they're all different age groups, they're younger and older, they're completely accepting of it, because we always saw the one common denominator of our music, whether it was something that was a bit more electronic on the album, something that was a bit heavier, something that was just more straightforward rock, the main vibe of the music was that it was over the top epic. And right. If there's one thing that's completely consistent with almost every WWE theme, or even just even, you know, certain themes on the independents for certain wrestlers, it's that the music is iconic and epic. And we always tried to have that type of vibe in our songs, that like anthemic, rememberable type of vibe. And I think that we found a perfect niche when we tried to do those things, because our originals have the same vibe. And I, you know, obviously that became like 100% true when independent wrestler Will Ospreay, who's the junior heavyweight champion in New Japan Pro Wrestling, when he heard our covers from WrestleMania 33 and made a Facebook post sharing it for us to write his theme. I thought he was joking, but so I messaged him anyway, just kind of like, because I had nothing to lose. And the rest is history, because it's become to date in from then to now, from June last year to here, it's become our biggest single. An original song that is basically for a professional wrestler. It's become the best promotion tool for the song. We hardly had any playlisting on the song. We had no big release through like an alternative press or Revolver. None of those guys helped to push the single. No one shouted it out. No one helped us. It was just, and it's still to this day growing at an exponential rate, just based on pretty much every time he wrestles a match. You know, every time right. He goes out there, we get a boost in views, we get a boost in comments of people being like, wow, this band's sick. They wrote like such an amazing theme. It's like one of my favorite themes. And it's not even a WWE theme.
Yeah,
it's a
exactly.
theme that's on a smaller promotion. So.
Yeah, and you know, you might not have gotten a release through Alternative Press, but you got a release through Wrestle Kingdom. You know what I'm
that's
saying?
That's what I'm saying.
That's insane.
If you asked me, I would have much rather, you know, the dream come true of having, you know, I mean, I still, guy, I mean, I got clearly tear, I'm getting teary eyed now just thinking at the idea of watching Wrestle Kingdom like I was on my couch a few months ago and seeing Ospreay come out to that inside the Tokyo Dome.
Yeah. I would love to go there one day. I would love to just see like a Wrestle Kingdom or just see a New Japan event. But for you, it's got to be something, you know, next level with you being, if you were to be able to go there, see it and hear the song that you wrote for, you know, Will Ospreay to come out to. That'd be amazing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for me now, the once you see one dream come true, then obviously it gives you a bit of leeway to dream even bigger. So for me, the next, you know, not necessarily plan, but, you know, the next thing I would love to do is to hopefully, you know, if the stars were to align, if things were to be there. I mean, I think anything is kind of possible in a way. I would love to perform that song live at next year's Wrestle Kingdom, Him to the Ring. So, I mean, I've already kind of planted the seed a little bit with him. I've already been a little bit in contact with the production team through email at New Japan Pro Wrestling. And it's certainly not to say that it will happen, but you really never know. We've seen crazier things happen. So,
right. All you have to do is just dream, and you might as well dream big while you're at it. Because, you know, with enough hard work and good luck and some contacts, you can make it happen. I mean, you already got the song. He's already coming out to it. So,
exactly. And he's not going to be stopping coming out to it anytime soon. So,
right. Exactly. So, and I mean, I don't want to say anything about Kane Hill, but I mean, they played on TakeOver and you guys are much better than those dudes.
Yeah, I mean, that was really cool though. I mean, it was, I mean, I thought it was really cool when Code Orange played a few months ago and they played Aleister Black to the Ring. I thought it was even cooler when Kane Hill came out. I know a couple of the dudes in that band. I thought it was really epic. I thought it was even more epic when Lizzie Hale played Ember Moon to the Ring. That's when I saw, like, when I saw that this was happening after the Code Orange thing and now this, I'm like, this is going to become more and more of a thing, and it's now a very, very real possibility for really any band. And then obviously depending on how things go with, you know, my band into the future, just, you never know where anyone's road is taking them, for that to be a possibility for them to be them on a TakeOver someday. And that is just more than cool that that's even a possibility now.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and play the new single Elevated. And this is the song that Will Ospreay is coming out to. When you're writing it, I guess give us some background deets and then we'll go ahead and give it a listen.
Well, I just remember that when we got into it and he told me that he was actually serious about needing a new theme, I just really asked him, you know, what was influences. And then obviously he told me that he either liked something that was really kind of powerful rap like an Eminem, or he loved something that was like arena style rock. And obviously that's right up our alley. So we actually had already had an instrumental that kind of was worked for what he was saying, but it was supposed to be used for us for something totally different. So we kind of modified it a little bit. And then it took me no more than maybe 2 hours to really crank into the lyrics. I kind of just wanted to write really to the theme of him and what he does and who he is and how he portrays himself. And then that word Elevated came to mind. And I knew that he was trying to, in terms of the championship, the junior heavyweight championship, he was trying to elevate the championship. That's what I saw him saying. So I was like, that's it. You know, the whole, obviously the idea that he's a prolific high flyer at this point. And I was just, you know, the hook kind of came to mind really quick. I kept it really simple. And I just, every time I wrote another lyric in the verse, I just pictured his journey and what he would want those fans to be thinking and what it'd be like to think in his mind. And it came out just super fast and it felt great writing it.
Excellent. Well, listeners, this is It Lives, It Breathes with their new single Elevated. right, everybody. That was It Lives, It Breathes. That was Elevated. Kevin taking us to Toontown over here. I certainly appreciate that. That's a tasty jam. Did you like that? Yeah. Taking them to Toontown. Everyone loves that. And you were mentioning, too, like, you're before we went on break, you're like, you know, Will Ospreay is such a, you know, an amazing talent and a high flyer. Guys, if you haven't checked it out, check out the video for Elevated on here. I checked it out earlier, and just a lot of excellent clips of Will Ospreay just doing what he does best, and it's amazing. So if you guys need a crash course on how awesome the dude is, that video will help you get there. That's for sure.
Hell yeah, 100%.
But yeah, speaking of wrestling themes, I want to keep the ball rolling here because we like wrestling so much and music. And my big thing is I think that every musician, every rock star, if you want to be a rock star in a rock band, you should check out professional wrestling. It can teach you a lot of things, you know, specifically, you know, how to work a crowd, how to be loved or how to be hated, how to make a statement, you know, how to put on a show, how to look cool or not look so cool. Like, there's so much that goes in, I think, that people can learn from, you know, when you want to try to do something in music, just look to pro wrestling. They're doing it. They're on stage doing it, making it happen. What do you think about that?
Oh, without a doubt. Literally without a doubt is more than 1 second.
But yeah, do you think that...
Sorry, my guitarist was trying to do hand signs to me to tell me what he was trying to do, and I had to put the phone down for a second. I'm in the studio. It looked like he was trying to tell me he's trying to suck a dick, and I'm like, what are you talking about? And he was like, no, I'm just going to eat. And he's putting like a spoon in his mouth. I'm like, you're out of your mind.
I'm just eating a large hot dog. It's cool.
Anyway, I couldn't agree more, because I know specifically for myself, I'm just one of those guys that, unless it was someone like Lemmy from Motorhead or like Alice Cooper, I really don't think that there's really any musician in any bigger band that I would really fanboy over, any kind of like rock star. I know a lot of people, if they met like they're for a rock star, they'd obviously be like, you know, Wayne's World, like I'm not worthy. But I don't really think that there's any that would really, I think it'd be really cool, but to me, it's still almost like a peer, just a, you know, a peer that's on a way bigger level than myself. But I know myself, I live in Orlando. Obviously the performance center for NXT is based out of the WWE Performance Center. I've run into a couple people downtown. I ran into Zack Ryder once, Emma, who is, I think she's called Tennille Dashwood or something like that now in the independents, but Carmella and Bailey, that shit freaked me out. Like that just blew my mind. Like I couldn't even process thought seeing WWE wrestlers. I knew I was a bigger fan than even bigger than music at that point. As far as like the people that I saw. And I know that, almost everything about my performance on stage is almost entirely, how I work a crowd and everything like that is almost entirely just stuff that I've seen from entrances, stuff that I've seen from iconic promos growing up in different eras of WWE or even WCW. I love the way of kind of being engaging from a reality perspective, but at the same time using it as an opportunity to kind of, you know, not script it, but give that kind of that aura on stage that wrestlers do. So, I mean, and it just evolves every time with every new grand entrance that I see from guys like Shinsuke Nakamura or anything like that, or even Finn Balor, just everything just kind of oozes into how I work a crowd on live performances. And people think that we're such a cool band to watch live. And I think that I just owe it all to wrestling performances, because to me, I take almost nothing from, you know, other rock stars. People probably take stuff from their iconic rock star favorites. Me, it's all come from wrestling performances, wrestling promos, wrestling entrances. It's all entirely from there as a front man and stuff like that. So
yeah, it's so integrated, I think, you know, music and wrestling. And yeah, if you want to portray being larger than life and being, you know, giving somebody a show that's more than just, you know, three dudes walking off the street in their jeans, you know what I'm saying? Like, take the hint from pro wrestling, guys. And yeah, that's kind of how I always pictured myself when I, you know, playing drums. Like I would give out a character where I'm like, you know, I'm this crazy, I'm like, you know, Animal from the Muppets or something like that, but I'm like this crazy yeah. guy, you know. So but yeah, all that's from wrestling. I just rip it off from, you know, the characters and stuff that I like, the themes that I want to portray also. So
oh, without a doubt. Yeah,
so you've ran into a few celebrities. I accidentally ran into the Bella Twins on Valentine's Day a few years ago, and
really?
I was wearing a Michael Jackson Beat It jacket, And it
that's
just,
off.
It was one of those things where I was like, right place, right time. They saw the jacket, loved it. We got to chat for a bit, took a photo, sent, they, you know, did a little autograph thing for me. It was awesome. Really awesome. But I was genuinely freaking out. I was trying to play it cool because, you know, I was like, yeah, I'm wearing a Michael Jackson Beta jacket. Why wouldn't I be cool? But I was about to lose my mind.
Yeah, I was the same way, 100%.
But yeah.
And I'm not even like particularly huge. Like when I met Zack Ryder, what actually happened was that I went to a improv, like kind of comedy place downtown with my girlfriend. I went to the bathroom and I came back, and people kind of, they come in pretty late into these things, into these comedy clubs. You know, the seating's pretty open, so they kind of like, you know, if you're sitting there 1 second, you're kind of sitting there next to no one, and you go to the bathroom, you come back, and then you're, you know, everything but you're seated next to you is completely full. And that's exactly what happened, but the lighting is low. So I kind of sat back down next to my girlfriend coming back from the bathroom, and I just noticed that, you know, there was like a, right next to me was a huge guy, and then next to him was two girls, and then they were interacting with a girl diagonally in front, sort of like south, southwest or whatever. I'm bad with directions, with someone that was like drunk in another row. And it was so hard to tell what the lighting was. But then eventually, as my kind of like eyes adjusted to the dark, and I could see out of the corner of my eye, I'm like, this dude sitting next to me that's massive is fucking Zack Ryder.
That's and insane.
And he was sitting next to Emma, who was sitting next to Carmella, and they were interacting with a drunk Bailey in the row ahead of us, who was trying to hit on two guys next to her, completely wasted.
Oh, man.
And they were like egging her on to hit on these two guys.
I can't imagine being wasted, nor can I imagine her hitting on dudes.
Yeah, and I was having a fucking panic attack. I was having a complete panic attack. And my girlfriend's like, you got to go tell him you want a picture and stuff like that. And I'm like, there's no way I'm asking him for a picture. I'm not going to be that guy. I don't have the balls. My girlfriend borderline got pissed at me because obviously she wanted me to like put this stuff on social media and stuff like that. So eventually I went and do it. And of course, Emma and Zack Ryder just looked like they were so annoyed that I even asked. And then in the back of the picture, you see Carmella photobombing it because she clearly was looking like she wanted the attention. This is still when she was in NXT. And then Bayley was more than happy to give like the biggest hug of all time because she was just completely sloshed.
Yeah.
But it was hilarious either way.
That sounds like the greatest story maybe of all time. So I thought my story was good because I was wearing a beaded jacket. You're seeing some stuff.
Yours is better. The beaded jacket, the anything with a beaded jacket is going to beat it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, we were mentioning too, you guys, you're doing all these wrestling themes. It's taken off on YouTube and stuff like that. You're getting a lot of great feedback from the wrestling themes. What are some of your favorite themes? Like, what are some of the most iconic themes for you over the years?
To me, I was a huge fan of Sting in his dark days in WCW.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think his theme ever really got put on blast enough, nor do I think it was kind of the greatest, but I think that I loved his theme at that particular time just because I just was a huge fan of the movie The Crow and thought that, you know, the cohesion of, you know, his gimmick pretty much being The Crow was the coolest thing in the world at that time. So right. I remember really liking his theme back then. I still love anything with the Undertaker's theme. I love the different evolutions that it's had. I mean, there's a couple of really cheesy ones in the whole American Badass era, even though I was a fan of the American Badass Undertaker. But like, I remember there was one point where Taker's theme kind of got more metal-y in like the Attitude Era, because for a short time it was when he was doing the whole demonic ministry angle. So they kind of gave him like this way edgier version of his theme around the time that he was doing like all his Hell in the Cell matches. And I loved that. But I mean, I would say just as a whole that anything with his theme kind of just wins by default. It's such the perfect kind of theme. I was always a huge fan of Vince McMahon's No Chance in Hell.
Yeah. That's a great one too.
I think it's perfect for Vince. Just that the way that the song played out, even when he comes out now, that dude can't help but walk like Conor McGregor when he comes out and does that whole walk that he does when that song comes on. I just thought it was great. But I mean, if I was going to have one favorite, it would just probably be the Game's Motorhead Triple H theme. I remember that the moment I saw WrestleMania 17 when Motorhead played Triple H to the ring, that was when I had decided that my dream was to play WrestleMania someday, just the same. And it's still been like my main motivation. It's not to play like the Budokan in Japan. It's not to play this, you know, whatever things or festival here, like my ultimate top of the mountain dream as a musician is to play WrestleMania. So,
dude, you got to throw
it. And it was from that moment.
You got to throw it out in the universe. Like I said, I think you guys are killing it. And I think, you know, you're already doing one theme. I'm sure there's going to be many themes to come in the future. As far as the themes that I'm super into, by the way, not to mean to interject my thoughts, but I will say this. Gold Dust has forever had my favorite theme song.
That's an interesting choice, and you're not wrong to think so. It's a, you know, he has such a unique, I mean, he's got a unique everything.
Right.
But it's, I mean, yeah, that theme is badass.
Yeah. I've always just been like, I always just thought it was just super well composed and super well done. And, yeah, Goldust was great. And even Stardust later on, Stardust had an awesome theme too, obviously kind of based on the Goldust vibe.
Yeah.
But yeah, and also too, speaking of new themes, like if I were to say, hey, here's some themes that I think you guys should definitely cover, even though it has no lyrics really, Pete Dunne's new theme is pretty top choice.
So sick. Yeah. I mean, Pete Dunne just himself is awesome. I'm actually even into the kind of unique character vibe. I'm a huge fan of Velveteen Dream and his theme song because it just reminds me of Prince, and I'm a massive Prince fan.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. If you could do any wrestler's theme song, who would it be?
Well, if I were to have a chance in, like, you know, kind of in another bucket list dream perspective to write any theme song, it would be, if I were in that perfect place to write a theme song for a wrestler getting signed to WWE and having to concoct something totally fresh and new, I would be ecstatic to write the theme for Kenny Omega.
Oh yeah.
Because to me, and this is not hating on guys like Roman Reigns or John Cena or any of those guys. I actually think that those guys are actually, they don't get the credit that in a lot of ways that they deserve, but we all understand why they kind of get the hate that they do. But at the same time, I don't think that even though those guys are positioned to be the one that's there to connect with that demographic and decade, like for instance, like when we look back on Hulk Hogan in the 1980s, even if you're not old enough and you're just a fan of wrestling and you know his name, so you go take the time to research him, the reason Hulk Hogan was perfect for the time and connected was because everything that embodied the character of Hulk Hogan was everything that embodied that Ronald Reagan presidential era of just like the fighting against drugs and that all American, perfect American vibe and saying your prayers and how it built into his character. And then fast forward into the Attitude Era, the reason that Stone Cold Steve Austin was perfect for his time was because he embodied everything that was the backlash of the Reagan era and into the 90s.
Right.
And these two characters were 100% without a doubt completely iconic and perfect for the fan base at that time, which is why they were so huge. In my opinion, there's been massive stars, but I'm saying as far as the perfect star for that time period, I don't think that there has been anyone since that has completely eclipsed with the audience like those two have. Except I think that when you look to the current nature of, you know, the generation that's so escapist and everything's about nostalgia into the, you know, you weren't born in the 80s, but you look back on the 80s from what your parents told you or what you see and you love all that shit and you love old video games and the escapist nature of the video games and your phone and kids playing Fortnite and how kids just are so not with it and they're just so in their phones. And I think Kenny Omega embodies that perfect nature of the current generation. And I think that he would be as big as a Hogan or as a Stone Cold Steve Austin. So to obviously have a chance to write a theme for a guy like that would be the most monumental thing to me.
Yeah, that's an excellent choice. And you know what? It's only a matter of time before that guy goes to WWE. Now, granted,
I don't know that they'll ever see him like that. And I'm fine because I don't think he cares either, because I think that his whole mission, even in New Japan Pro Wrestling, to change the world, he's such a forward thinker and he understands it so much that he's going to make an impact either way. But I just think that if there were to be some type of a parallel universe where they did know that Kenny Omega was that guy and they put him in that spot, he would be as big as Austin and as big as Hogan were in their respective generations and decades, without a shadow of a doubt. Not to mention, he is the, I mean, and to me right now, and just to not get too into it, but he is the best wrestler in the world. I think he's the best wrestler in the world right now.
You know, I was going to say, arguably one of the best wrestlers. I would say, you know, if anybody would challenge him, maybe somebody like AJ Styles, you know, but even AJ Styles has a much more seasoned veteran than Kenny Omega. Kenny Omega is still young. You know what I'm saying?
That's what I'm saying. Like, AJ Styles, to me, is from a personality perspective, I don't think he really... I think everybody loves AJ because they just think that AJ is the shit. Physically, from a perspective, I think he's the second coming of Shawn Michaels. No one's been able to be as good a performer since Shawn as AJ can. But just as a character, and just even as a person, and understanding his own brand, AJ is just kind of, you know, he's just phenomenal. But it's like he's not connecting with any... He's not the face of a particular generation like Hogan and Austin were. I think that Kenny would be that person. I think he literally would be the face of a generation.
And also, I feel like Kenny, like, basically single-handedly, like, DIY'd his, you know, a lot of his success, because, like, yeah, in New Japan, AJ was huge, and in TNA, AJ always had a name for himself, but, like, you know, Kenny Omega is putting, you know, his stuff, like, I just feel like he's making a name for himself, like, that's even larger than New Japan wrestling, you know? And
that's what I'm saying, 100%. He gets it in a way that almost no one has in a very, very long time. He cares that much, and everything down to how he wants to tell a story. I mean, as far as I know, Kenny is not homosexual, but he's so committed to telling this Golden Lover storyline, where it's like kind of borderline, and it's never really made point blank that it's a homosexual storyline. That hits, you know, it's kind of like this love story with him and Kota Ibushi.
Right.
But they do kiss, and they do these things, and they do show that they love each other. So you don't know if it's got a legitimate homosexual love story vibe. But the fact that he is comfortable going there just for the sake of telling a true, different, ambitious story in the world of professional wrestling, which would have never done things like this in the past,
that's true,
shows that he gets it more than anybody.
Right. And he's still kayfabing, you know? People. You know what I'm saying? Basically, guys, what that means is going like method acting. He's living it, you know, 100%. And I mean,
yeah.
So he's got the talent, and he's got the brains, and he's got the marketing skill. I mean, him versus Jericho, I mean, that was like a license to print money earlier this year. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, just, it was spitting it out. It was like, it was everything that I dreamed and more out of that match. I mean, and it's obviously in part to Jericho too. Jericho just, to me, Jericho is that modern GOAT. He really is. I think that Jericho is, we love Jericho. We're kind of living in the moment of like, oh, he's so cool. But I think 20 years from now, we're going to look back on Jericho the way we did at Ric Flair.
You know, I was going to say the same thing. Like, the way that we idolize like Flair, I think Jericho, Shawn Michaels, I think they're all going to be in the same sentence together. You know what I'm saying? In the top three. And Jericho's still, unlike Shawn Michaels, and, you know, for example, like, he's still out there doing it, and he's doing new, big, you know, taking big chances. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah,
he's going to just leave WWE at the height of his career to, you know, at the biggest run of his career, to go play music, and then show up in Japan for a totally different Fed and have one of the biggest matches of all time.
Exactly. Just because he can, because he knows that he can put his balls on the table like that at this point.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. He's always able to consistently reinvent himself in a way that's totally fresh every time. I wish that I could do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just don't know.
And there's something to say about doing something like that in your, you know, mid to late 40s. You know,
oh yeah,
towards like the tail end of your wrestling career. So big shout out to Chris Jericho. This just became the Chris Jericho appreciation podcast there for a second.
Absolutely.
So, but yeah, also, you know, we've chatted a lot about wrestling, but I want to get back into music. And what I really love about this podcast is we're actually still talking music and wrestling as we go. We're like just interweaving our two biggest passions, I would say. And I love this.
Yes, sir.
I love what we're doing here. But, you know, a lot of people ask me some questions because, you know, when you guys, you know, the first album, it did come out on Stay Sick Recordings. A question that was like, hey, why don't you ask Kevin this? You know, how did you guys get hooked up with Franz to begin with?
We had a manager at the time who was also the manager of a band called Paris. And he was already, his name was Matt Arsenault. He was a singer of a pop punk band on Rise Records at the time, called The Lost for Words. Kind of like a veteran legacy pop punk band, been around for a long time. And he started managing us. We're all from the same town. He had already known Franz from multiple tours, you know, on Warped and things like that. So he had showed Franz us on Warped, finding out that Franz was starting a label. And we had a song that we were pretty much ready to release at the time, was unreleased at the time, called Independence Day. Obviously, it's since been released. It was like the lead single that we announced our signing with when we announced to Stay Sick Recordings. And Franz loved it. He said that, you know, he obviously put it in print, but when he heard it initially, he was like, this is like the future of music, which is always, it's obviously like, you know, an uncomfortable kind of claim to take upon yourself. But I know that he's obviously a guy that tries to make big claims, to make big moves. It's just his personality. We obviously know him well enough now, and he's a really awesome guy. He makes those big claims and makes those big moves, and he's had big payoffs from them. And then we ended up kind of being the flagship artist, like that first major signing on that label when he kind of made that big debut. And with that song, and obviously it was very polarizing because it was just so over the top, and it's hard to get people into the idea, to be universally into the idea of a band that's willing to be so over the top, especially with the lead singer that, you know, has a haircut like mine, and, you know, the band's image being so shiny, to say the least, I guess, you know, just so over the top. And then just, you know, obviously then it became Dennis from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia mania with my face, with this whole kind of like massive lookalike contest. And every time I do a new different date on tour, it was always just like, hey, I don't mean to upset you, but do you know you look like Dennis from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia? And I'm like, I'm not upset that you think I look like that, because first of all, it's not even like a bad thing. The guy's an attractive guy.
Yeah, super, but super studly. He's a handsome guy.
Yeah, I'm like, it's the fact that you think that I don't already know this, or that I haven't been told this a million times. It's what feels silly. So that having to have that consistent conversation a million times with people, like, I don't know if you know this. I'm like, Jesus, I know.
Yeah, it's one of the most popular shows of the decade. Of course, I've heard
like
this
they're
before.
They're making fucking memes of our faces together and like comparisons. Like, I know. I've been tagged on Facebook. It's fucking social media.
But yeah, you know, and also too, one of the questions, another question that was submitted is, tell us about your signature haircut.
The thing with that is, like, they were like, oh, why did you choose that haircut? First off, I grew up in a very strict Catholic home growing up. So any time growing up where I even ever tried to grow my hair, my dad would always force me right into a barbershop to get it cut. Now, naturally, when you try to keep your hand down on your children, they're always going to rebel harder once they have an opportunity to run out the door. Like, you can lock your dog in the house. The second you let it out, it's going to run even farther away before it decides to come back. And that's really what it was. So since that time, obviously when I got old enough to kind of rebel, I've had like every haircut in the book. So it's like this haircut is nothing new in terms of like the extreme haircut. I've gone completely bald at one point. I've had mohawks. I've had, you know, crazy Sum 41 spiky hairdos. I've had a bowl cut. I've had a rat tail. Like, I've literally had everything in a different way or another, except for a pomp, because I don't think my hair would ever kind of style that way because it's so curly and wavy. But, and I've had really long hair, obviously. But this kind of happened by accident. I just know that I liked my hair styled kind of like neatly on the top, but at the same time, I like long hair. But having long hair on the sides, I look like Carrot Top because of the way my hair is. And I've tried that, and it didn't work, and it didn't get me any girls at the time. So I just kind of started freestyling my look in terms of when I'd go to the hair salon, and I'd keep it pretty neat on the top, but I kind of just started growing out the back because I kind of thought I'm just going to try something new. But I wasn't thinking mullet when I was doing this. I don't really think that – I don't know how I stumbled into it like that. And then out of nowhere, because I just, as it got longer in the back, I just was liking how it looked, but I was still never thinking mullet. And it really is a legitimate mullet. I mean, I can't run away from the fact and be like, well, it's not really a mullet. I'm like, no, I have a fucking mullet. You know what I mean? But I just, as it got longer, I liked how it looked. I liked how it was still, tight on the sides and short, because it kind of just made my head look good. and it didn't make me look like I had a fat head. I had a neat haircut on top, but I still had an edginess of having long hair in the back. And I was like, this is fucking badass. And then I would try different things with it. I'd do little Padawan braids in it. I'd go to barbers and get like, you know, weird hair designs like shaved into the side of my head, because I just don't really give a shit. Like, I kind of just like, I have one life to live. Why not the fuck? I'm not doing anything to impress anyone. I'm just kind of trying to be happy myself with whatever I have. And to be honest, I don't really give a fuck if people hear, if think my hair is ugly or whatever. I like it, and that's really all I care about. Brother, I really could give a fuck less.
It's your gimmick, man, my friend. I mean, that's when I saw, yeah, like, you know, I see your videos and stuff, I'm like, this guy has a perfect understanding of who his character is, what the gimmick is, and yeah, you like a little, sounds to me like you like a little business in the front, and, you know, just a lot of party in the back, brother.
All I can say is I don't know anybody else out there, and this is a true thing, this isn't me just kind of just, you know, boasting. I don't know anyone else out there that really goes out into public to bars like I do, and where I live in downtown Orlando, and has had as many shots bought for me as they would hope with their haircut. I've had more than I can count. I've never had to ask or pay for these shots. I've kind of just gone out having a good time, and people thought it was so great that they wanted to buy me and my girlfriend some shots. And I think that is, you know, warrants some kind of cool points. So. Yeah,
exactly. Guys, if you're listening here, for one, this is totally Kevin's gimmick. So don't be trying to steal his gimmick, but it just goes to show you, if you like to drink economically, get yourself a fun haircut. People love it. Maybe grow some ironic facial hair. People like that too. I had a mustache for a long time. I got really into this movie Bronson. I'm sure you've seen it.
It's, oh yes, sir. So, absolutely. I love that movie.
You know,
Tom Hardy.
Right, exactly. And so I'm bald, and so I was like shaving my head, and I was like, you know what, I'm gonna grow this big Bronson mustache. And I've been hitting the gym, so I was looking pretty good at the time. And so I cultivated this stash and curled it and everything, and it just looked like an old, like a totally old 1920s boxer type of look or something like that. And
you look like the vaudevillains.
Exactly. Look just like the vaudevillains. And I'll tell you what, it didn't pick up any chicks, but like, I literally had guys that would like run across the street to give me a high five. So
that's awesome.
And
100%
yes,
fantastic.
So listeners, let this be a lesson to you. Okay. This podcast has been filled with great advice and awesome lessons and things you need to know, but iconic haircut and some ironic facial hair. That's the perfect tag team right there. I think we just came up with our tag team, iconic and ironic. It's gonna happen. So
I love that.
But yeah, Kevin, as we're winding down, brother, why don't you tell everybody, where we can find It Lives It Breathes on the internet?
It Lives It Breathes is on pretty much every social that you can actually find. But obviously, to us, at the end of the day, even though people may watch our videos and think that we want things to be about a gimmick or about a look, the music at the end of the day is the most important thing. And our main hub that we try to push more than anything is obviously our Spotify. If you don't use Spotify, you can still find us on iTunes and Apple Music and whatever other streaming stuff you might use. We pretty much have it on all of them because of where we distribute our music. But Spotify is our main hub, and we have our main WWE medley playlist on there that has every single cover that we've done to date. It's not the last ones that we're going to do. Our next one is slated to be set up for SummerSlam. And obviously, if you go and listen to all the songs and you dig them, please go and message us on whatever social media site that you use, because obviously you'll be talking to me and I'll be able to kind of, you know, either give you a hint or you can give me a suggestion of what you think that we should do next, because obviously there's kind of like an endless array of themes that we could choose. If you're wondering or want to say, oh, you should do this one, we probably have already done it, so go check that medley playlist and follow us on there. And please just follow our Spotify as a whole, because we actually have other covers on there. We've done covers of Tool. We've done covers of Billy Joel's We Didn't Start the Fire. And then obviously our album is on there, and our newest single, Elevated, the Will Ospreay theme. So we're trying to really push that as much as we can. And we have a lot of new original music that's going to be dropping within the next few weeks. So everything's kind of about to pick up really, really fast, really, really soon. Right now, we're obviously in the studio setting up for it, but everything is about to, as Jim Ross would say, business is going to pick up real soon.
It's so. About to be a slobber knocker, ladies and gentlemen.
100%, yeah.
Well, fantastic. Brother, I had such a great time talking with you. It's been worth a year's wait, and hopefully, you know, we can do this again sometime, and I'd love to have you back on to talk music, talk wrestling, and get all that taken care of again. So I had a great time. Hopefully you did too. So.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. I would be more than happy to come on anytime you'd like.
Yeah, thank you so much. And guys, thank you so much for listening to the show. And if you like what you heard today, and something tells me that you did because you made it all the way to the end of the fucking podcast, you can check out Sean versus Wild online, on the net, on the internet, on America Online. If you go to Netscape or Gateway, you can check it out. It's on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and you'll be interacting with me. So if you have any questions or anything like that, you want to tell me that the podcast rocks, feel free to do so. But yeah, check it out online. And Kevin, thanks so much again for doing the show.
Thank you, Sean.
All right. And guys, thanks for tuning in. This has been the Sean versus Wild podcast.
For listening, DNN.